Bum 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 bum
Yeah.
bum bum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Peter Lorre. Can you tell it is me?
So, was Ren based on that? The voice of Ren from Ren and Stimpy?
Oh, yeah. Actually,
it was very close.
It was inspired by,
Yeah.
A little bit of him and someone else made up that voice. But yeah, Peter Lorre was known for, you know, films such as what we're going to talk about today, M, and, you know, Casablanca, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Maltese Falcon. But he was featured a lot in Looney Tunes cartoons.
Ah, indeed. But not just Peter Lorre over there. Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, the birthday boy himself, in here for his birthday month. And last week, or last episode, I should say, I'm no scientist, I don't know what day of the year it is, last week, or last episode, we discussed what we would be doing for Gus's birthday month, and so we decided that we would be doing some foreign films that Gus has never seen before, in order to allow me to force him to watch them. And we discussed that M would be one of the films we would watch, and therefore M we did. Before we get into it, though, I would like to just briefly state what we do here on the pod. So every week we watch a film. We then take to the pod to discuss some film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Or maybe it's a animated film, and we imagine what it would look like if it was live, baby live. Or even something like we're going to do today, where we'll get to. Yeah, stick around, but something a little different. We take the film, we watch, and we imagine it in a different light for the modern era. Then we have a little bit of questiony time, and then we head on our way. And so here we are, Gus's birthday month movie number one. We have M, 1931's M. And what a movie this is. M does not stand for movie either.
No, it doesn't. It stands for murder.
Calm and murder.
M stands for calm and murder.
A. The C is silent. And the A.
And the L.
Yeah, everything. It's all silent, except for murder.
And murder. So, yeah,
those are two things that don't go together. Calm and murder.
You had watched this film back in your college days in a film studies class, and it's stuck with you. Like a good Thanksgiving meal, it stuck with you. And
stuck to the ribs.
Yeah. And a while now, you've recommended I check this film out. But now that it's my birthday month, you've subjected me to it. So I did take the time, hopped on the old HBO Max where it can be found, and watched this 1931 German foreign film. And
I don't know why, but when you said foreign, it was the mic or something, you'll hear it when you're editing it. It 100% sounds like you're like this German 1931 porn film. That's what it comes through as.
Well, let's hope not, considering what this movie's about.
I know. That's why I was like, ooh.
Maybe my spitty mouth got all gummy.
This foreign
film. Foreign film. Yes, indeed. Yeah, popped those subtitles on and watched away. And what I'll say, I'm glad you recommended this movie. I see why it has stuck with you. Because this is one of those, it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I understand why. Mm. It's masterpiece stuff here. Especially, obviously, it can't go without being said for the time it came out.
Yeah.
This movie's all like 90 years old.
That's the thing that's always alarming to me, is how this movie could come out today, like if it was just the same everything, just colorized and everything, and it came out today, hell, even non-colorized, it would still be fine. Like, it'd still do well and be looked at just in the brightest of light. Like, it has not aged.
Yeah, its message is very prominent, and we'll get into that stuff very soon. And that's obviously what makes it so, so good, but so memorable and so effective is what it's about, not necessarily the plot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, what M is infamous for, especially for its time when it came out, is about a child murderer who's on the loose, gripping this, you know, city in Germany with fear. And what it centralizes on is the police are searching for this man, but because the police have upped their numbers, criminals can't perform their duties, their criminal duties, because there's so much police activity. So they take it upon themselves to try to find this child murderer as well. So you got like two sides of a coin looking for, you know, having the same goal in a sense.
Two sides of the same coin.
Whoa.
It's a movie that it's, I don't know. I find this with older movies more than modern movies, in that they are able to pull off things where it's like the movie has a little bit of everything. Whereas, like, for example, we always made the joke, but Miracle on 34th Street, you know, the commercial for that, the original commercial for that, which is like, what, 5 minutes long? It's a film in and of itself. But it's like, hey, it's got heart, it's got romance, and it's cool, and it's got this and that, and it's got all these things. And that's true, because if you watch Miracle on 34th Street, it's got humor, it's got drama, it's got romance, it's got a little bit of everything. This film, while it doesn't have those things necessarily, it's almost, in a sense, it's very dramatic, very dark, but it's got, like, fringe comedy in it every now and again. It's like a dark humor side of things, I suppose. And that's what's so interesting about it, and why it's so iconic and well preserved and everything like that, is because it is like a perfect film, in that it just manages to balance everything out very well, and it never feels forced in any of its different not genre crossing, but, you know, different elements throughout,
and done like tastefully so.
Yeah.
You know, nothing feels out of place. Nothing feels, nothing like takes you out of it. Like, it does have a little bit of multiple genres. It has levity here and there.
Yeah, but if I say child, the movie's about child murdering, and it's kind of funny. Like, that doesn't work.
And maybe you should have the 5 minute commercial.
Yeah, like that doesn't work. But yeah. For some reason, there are moments in this movie that are like, they have, it's like tasteful comedy. Like, it's not laughing at the idea. It's more like the comic relief to the serious situations that are going on.
Right. And, you know, those moments kind of come middle to maybe last third. Or, yeah, I'd say last third of the movie, if you broke it down into thirds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you get all the heavy stuff and what's going on, but a lot of the humor comes from some of the criminals who are on the search for this child murderer, or even some of the police antics, things like that. But what's really effective, and it's right from the get-go, and Ben and I are going to kind of paint you the picture of the opening of this movie, because it's very effective.
Yep.
And icky.
Yes.
So right off the bat, you're greeted with like kind of like a newspaper clipping that's posted on a wall of, you know, what's happening. There's a child murderer on the loose, and you got all these kids running around and playing and doing like duck, duck, goose. But instead, they're doing it with like, or it's almost like an eeny, meeny, miny, moe situation.
Yeah.
But the rhyme has to do with this murderer. And it's very dark right out the gate. But you keep cutting back to this mother.
Yeah, that's the terrifying part.
In her kitchen, like prepping dinner, looking at the clock, you know, school's almost out. She's gleefully getting ready for her child to come home and have dinner. And it cuts to the child who's leaving school, and you're greeted with This is what's fascinating, too. One of the crazy things to think about in cinema history, but noted as the first time a character has had a theme in a movie.
Oh, and that's the theme song to him.
Yeah, that's this guy. Is he whistles.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's around. And it's, Grieg. Grieg. G-R-E-I-G or I-E-G? The composer. He does In the Hall of the Mountain King. You know? And yeah, that's regarded as the first time in a movie that a character had a theme. Because
would have been more effective if when he was like approaching it, like ba-dun, ba-dun.
It would have been more effective, but it doesn't make any sense if you think about it now.
What if it went bump, bum, 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 bum?
It's almost, but you know, it's funny. It's like you're quoting Jaws theme, Halloween theme. What? Why not M theme? It's kind of creepy the way he does it.
Yeah, true. But if Michael Myers was coming at you and he's whistling in the Hall of Mountain King, you might be like, what?
You'd be more scared. Terrified.
You'd be scared still. Don't get me wrong. But
like, he's off pitch.
Yeah.
It's menacingly.
Yeah. So he approaches, he starts kind of stalking the little girl, so to speak.
And all you see is a shadow.
Yeah.
And you see him interacting with this girl, but just through shadow. And it's very effective and very icky.
It makes you feel like he's not a real person. It makes you feel like he's more of a monster than, which, you know, child murderer, sure. But at the same time, it takes away that, it's similar to like with Jaws, you don't see the monster, right? And so it's more effective as a villain. Same with this, like you don't see him, you can't put a face to him, you don't know who this person is, you just know he's doing terrible things and you're seeing this outline shape, but you don't know, you know, anything about him or what he is other than he's a murderer. Same reason why Criminal Minds and CSI and all these crime shows, they don't show who the killer is until usually the end or toward the end. Because you know, you're building up this vision in your head and then you see them for the first time, so to speak.
So you got little girl Elsie. Walking around with her ball, and the murderer goes and buys her a balloon, and it keeps cutting back to that mother, you know.
Yeah.
Worries are growing. You know, she notices
and
that
she doesn't even really say anything like throughout that entire, but she's like just waltzing around and like you said, being like just prepping dinner, being calm. But she's just, like, going about her day like it's an average day, and she's really not saying anything, and that's what's, like, effective of it at first. And, you said, you start to feel she's being a little more, like, going quick, she's looking out the window, different things like that.
Yeah, without words being said, as a viewer, you get the sense that she can feel that something isn't right. And that's where director Fritz Lang really pulled off a masterpiece here. It's moments like that are riddled throughout the film where, like, because this is coming off of the silent film era, not a lot is said, or there's moments of complete silence, like no music, no sound effects even. It just goes back to being a silent film. And it's just as effective because you get the sense of what's happening with these characters through his direction. And that happens here at the beginning. This growing worry, and, you know, she notices that the kids are coming home and her daughter's not there. And she notices the time, and it's way past when she would usually be here. And she finally goes out and gives, now that I've seen the movie, it kind of feels iconic, her line. What was it, Ben?
Issy! Yeah. She says it all the time, like a couple times. Issy! She's looking for her daughter. Can't find her anywhere.
You know what we do find?
The creepy shots.
Yeah. A rogue ball rolling out of a bush.
Yeah.
A rogue balloon.
Yeah.
Floating in some power lines. It's
That's more effective than, you know, if this movie came out today, I'm not saying that a movie would probably show the kid being dead or killed. It might show like a cold body or sorts, you know, something along those lines. Or at least give you some kind of, it never, ever shows a dead child in this movie. But no. Without that being said, the balloon rolling down and or balloon going up and getting stuck and like waving back and forth in the wind and the balloon rolling down out of the bush, it's like you know the fate without having to, you know, see anything. And you feel the dread from the mother. It's very, I say icky because it is like, it makes you feel, it's one of those movies that you need to see it. You do, but it will make you feel like, oh, that's rough. I don't like that feeling because yeah. it's so good at doing what it's trying to portray.
So they've done a wonderful, masterful job at setting up this horrible human being in this murderer, right? Child murder, yeah. And in, like we mentioned in the summary, it's gripped this city with fear. And kind of gets everyone on their toes, almost like a mob is forming. Everyone's a suspect.
Yeah.
And if they, like, oh, what's this guy talking to this kid for? He must be the killer. Get him. You know, without any kind of proof or trial, yeah. even, and that'll come into play later. But like a manhunt for anybody.
No evil dies safe. Tonight.
Yeah, very reminiscent to Halloween Kills. Where's another classic.
Tommy Doyle. Where is he?
Yeah, he's.
He'd find him in a heartbeat. He'd kill a couple other people on the way there, but he'd get him.
Yeah, and evil does die tonight. I'll tell you that. What time of the year would you recommend watching M? Christmas Eve?
Yes. This time of year, I think. This time of year when
November,
it's...
November spooky month.
Kinda, but I don't necessarily think this movie's scary. It is dramatic. It has thrilling moments, such as like
it's
a thriller.
It's a thriller.
Yeah, but it's like, what's that movie? Along Came a Spider... Or even, like, Silence of the Lambs, to me, is more of a thriller than a horror film. I know people consider it a horror film, but it's more of a thriller to me. Those, necessarily, I think watching them in, like, they're cold weather movies, but not, like, snowy weather movies. Like, dreary day kind of movie.
Yeah, this is a good one to pop on if it just got done raining.
Yeah, it's like a dreary day kind of movie, yeah. Yeah. It's just like that's what I mean by like this time of year. I mean, right now it's like 40 something degrees outside and sprinkling, you know, and cloudy. Like it's a dreary kind of day for it. I wouldn't watch it in like the summer. I'm like, yeah. Oh boy. And now that might just be because when I watched this movie, it was only a semester. This would have been my winter or spring semester, and I think I was. Watched this one, if I recall, right early spring. So when it was cold and rainy and still, so maybe that's why. But
so we've painted the picture of, you know, what's kind of to lead for the rest of this movie. Things are dire, but that once again is what's so great about this movie is there are moments of levity that make sense, that fit, that don't feel out of place. There are moments of, I was going to say there's moments of hope, but there really aren't.
No, not really. You know,
it's like a mystery. They're like, how are they going to find this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
No one, there's no evidence. And granted, this is 1931, so you know DNA isn't a thing yet in terms of like using it for crime and all that stuff. They can't really figure out. You know, they have no leads. They really don't know. And that's kind of what's interesting about this movie is we do see both sides. You know, a lot of times when we see crime shows or anything like that, you only see the side of the cops or the law enforcement. You don't necessarily see this other side so much where it's like, how is this actually affecting the ecosystem of the, you know, the underground, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have, say, you know, a group of robbers. They're like a group of robbers. And then another guy comes in and starts robbing banks near them. They might get worried because they're like, oh, this guy is going to put more eyes around the area and might hurt us. And it's a similar idea here where it's, you know, we see the cops searching. And the guys that aren't even guilty of these murders are like, we need to find this guy too and do the right thing and find this guy. Because if we can get rid of him, then we don't have to worry as much about the cops finding us, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And that's what I found that fascinating. And it actually focuses more on the criminals throughout this movie, the criminal underground, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed a lot. And what's... You know, we won't get into, like, spoiling any of the twists and turns throughout the movie. I do really implore people to check this out if they haven't. But what's fascinating about it, and I'll just say criminals, we focus on these people who are not, you know, quote-unquote good people. They do wrong in society. And in typical movies... Or most stories, they would be seen as villains, and we're rooting for them to fail.
Yeah.
Whereas in this movie, it focuses so much on wrongdoers, and they're not heroes, but you want them to succeed.
They're the lesser of two evils.
Here you go.
They're the lesser of two evils because they're bad. They do bad things, but they're not as bad as this child murderer who we have focused on and know what they're doing, and they're the villain. So, you know, this is like if we were watching any modern movie and you know, something like this happened where it's like the bad guy, a once bad guy is now hunting down another bad guy, but he's still the bad guy, you know, like they're still bad people. So I don't know.
There's a dark commentary within this movie of like, yes, some people do horrible things, but what if they're not in control of the things they do that are so horrible, that we deem as so horrible, that are awful things? What if they can't help it?
Yeah.
What if they it's beyond them to control? Is it their fault? Are they to be trialed? Are they to be executed? Are they, like, who's to say? And that's a big message within this movie, is like who is the true judge of what is right and wrong, and what is to be done with that? This movie is just so fascinating. And yes, part of it is because it's so old that I myself am so like infatuated with it.
It has this prominent message that even today still works. Like, you know, you watch a lot of older movies and they don't, it's not that they don't hold up today. They just don't have their messages, or you can watch a lot of movies and be like, that message doesn't fly today, or that message really isn't prominent or matter to today's society. Whereas this one is very intriguing and the philosophical element of it and how it is still prominent. It seems so odd because I feel like this movie comes out today, it would still be just as dark. A movie that I guess the closest I can tie to like a modern version of this, not in terms of the criminals and everything, but like the child murdering aspect and all this, would be like Prisoners. In terms of making you feel icky and someone going, you know, someone different than the law enforcement searching going on and things like that. Yeah. But in terms of a parallel, but yeah, it's so odd. It's jarring to a degree. We think like back in those days in the, you know, the 30s, which almost 100 years ago now, we always think that like, oh, times were so much different back then. So we sometimes when you find a movie like this that has a message or a portrayal of something that seems like it's just as effective as it would be today, it can be very jarring to the mind and the senses.
Ensnare the mind.
Yeah, glad you got that Snape reference.
You know, this movie was made right on the cusp of the Nazi rise.
Yes.
In Germany. It's 1931, so World War II is a brewing. This movie was banned in Germany up until 1966.
Yeah.
You know, they just did not want messages like this to be, you know, displayed throughout their country.
I mean, the U.S. release date was 97. So,
yeah. 1997. And his wife produced this movie, and it was the last movie they produced together. They started their following movie, but they split apart from making that movie together because she joined the Nazi party and he did not. He fled. He fled the country. Peter Lorre fled the country before this movie came out. Around when this movie came out, because he is Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, you know, things were not looking good over in Germany around this time in history. So both these gentlemen left the country, and that's part of why M was, you know, was banned for so long. So not only is this movie about a scary subject, but it came out at a scary time around a scary environment in history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I respect this movie for many reasons.
Yeah, and I guess something it's not a spoiler by any sense of the means, but something we should discuss is, you know, how does a movie about a child murderer get the name M, so to speak, you know, like how does this in at all tie together? I want to go into that very briefly. Obviously we don't want to, you know, spoil too much. We've given the basic gist, but just an idea of, you know, where that, we can touch on that, I feel, without spoiling too much.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
And so the movie, just to give you an inkling, a taste, to understand why the film gets called M, is the criminals and the cops are all on the lookout for this child murderer. And they basically want to find him before the cops, and so they can figure out their own things. And so they start pursuing him, and basically they end up finding this man, perhaps who they think, but anyone they deem is the murderer, they are to write an M on their hand in chalk for murderer and pat him on the back so that they would then be branded with an M. And so that's the criminal's plan to catch this guy, is to basically brand him with an M and then follow him and be able to figure it out from there. And so that's why the cover of the movie, I mean, if you look, like, I know you had an idea, but I mean, you look at the cover of this film, you wouldn't necessarily get much from the cover. It's a hand with an M on it, you know, but
yeah, there's it's either that or the other cover I've seen is they leave nothing to the imagination. It's the shot you're talking about. It's the murderer looking at his shoulder, and there's the M on his back.
Yeah, and so, it's an interesting idea. I mean, murderer in German, and I obviously cannot speak German, so it's spelled Morder. It has some thingies Mortar. Over the O, so I believe it'd be like Mordor or something like that. The most German I know is from Attack on Titan. that in and of itself is pretty iconic and a cool idea of, like, how to find someone. And back then, you know, nowadays,
they take a picture. I'll piggyback of what you just said before I jumped to what I was going to say. Anime, we love it. Lupin the Third, we love it. It's an ongoing series, and I think it's part 5 of the show, which came out in 2018. Part of the first arc of it is Lupin, or Lupin, steals billions from this group of people.
And so, billions!
So to get back at him and find him, they create an app, a game, the Lupin game. And to people, all they're doing is taking pictures of Lupin wherever they see him. Like, oh, there's Lupin. I got him. I took a picture. And these criminals are using this game as a means to find Lupin wherever he is. So he's, like, always under constant watch because people are playing a game, and every time they take a picture, they get points. So they think they're winning this point-based game by seeing this person taking pictures of him. But really, it's a means for these criminals to find him.
That's an interesting take. Yeah, I like that.
It's a great idea for that first arc of that show. And back in the day, in this movie, the criminal underground, they use the homeless. They contact all the homeless people to find this murderer. It's like, if you see something suspicious, you know, report it. And those are the people who brand the killer with the M. It's the homeless. And what I found fascinating was, I don't know what context, but in Germany, around this time, it might have even been a little after, they did that actually happened. They used the homeless in order to find people. It might have been to find, Jews.
Other criminals?
Or I don't think it was other criminals. I think it was...
you're saying the Nazi party was used.
I don't know more than that simple sentence of, like, the using the homeless to their advantage, like, as eyes, was a thing that was used around
the
streets.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I found brilliant. Yeah.
In terms of the movie, it all flows together. It's like we've been saying, highly recommend you find it. It is on HBO Max and it's Criterion Collection. So it's done up very nice and pretty and well preserved, as it should be. I mean, it's highly rated critically, and it's not, it's not a long movie, but it's not a short movie either. It's
2 hours.
It's 111 minutes, so just under two.
I like to round up.
You like to round up? That's cheating, but whatever. It's 111 minutes. So what? That's 1 hour and 40. No, 1 hour, and it'd be 1 hour and 51 minutes, right?
41?
No, if it's 111.
Oh, yeah,
minutes,
sorry.
1 hour, one hour and 51.
Mm-hmm. 151, yeah.
Minutes, and it's, I think it flies relatively easy if you're not a subtitles kind of person. I think this is, I'm not really a subtitles kind of person in terms of foreign films and whatnot, and I think this is a movie that I was telling you this, and you said you think it's true for all foreign films, but I've experienced foreign films where I'm like, this is a chore reading. This one, you don't feel like you're, after a while, you forget you're reading subtitles and hearing German, and it just starts playing in your head, kind of, because it's so effective.
I say that all the time. Like, at first, it might be a little jarring because we're not used to it, like reading and watching a movie. But after a little bit, give it like 15 minutes, you're used to it. You would argue against that. Maybe not for every movie. I say probably. But this movie, what is helpful, like I mentioned, it came off with a silent era. So there is dialogue, but not so much. It doesn't carry the movie. There are a lot of moments of silence and just visuals, and stuff like that. So it is not a chore to read and watch if you don't speak German.
Yes, indeed. Ultimately, I definitely recommend you give her a watch. Well worth it. And don't want to really go much more into it, I don't think, unless you do, because the ending of this film, while it is extraordinarily iconic, and it has a lot of good talking points to it, especially, you know, in terms of like philosophical ideals and things like that. I guess it's important to say on top of that, though, that that's something that almost needs experienced, because it is very effective in everything that is done and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to touch base on that or just let people view it for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could have a whole conversation on the finale alone. But as Ben said, it is something to be experienced. I think it's truly best to go into the ending of this movie on, you know, going through the journey to get there as opposed to us kind of spoiling it and talking about it. Because it kind of makes you question your own morals.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it at that. It is some great acting, some great messages, and it definitely keeps you on the edge of your seat for a movie that came out in 1931.
Yeah.
But this was the gift to me for my birthday month.
And it didn't even make you cry.
No, but it was a gift indeed. You make me feel like shit for making you watch movies you don't like for your birthday month.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm a good person. You're an asshole. Yeah, right.
Wait until March comes around again.
You're like, here's Thunder Prince. I don't know, why is that the movie?
It's not going to be Thunder Prince because I don't want to watch it.
Hey, you pop Thunder Prince into your PS5 and it breaks. But indeed, that is M. Again, highly recommend you give it a look-see and see for yourself what we were talking about, as well as build upon that, because like we said, we did not go into the full blunt force of the movie at the end, especially where it does just kind of hit you in the face and several other parts of your body as you watch the film. And so that is M, and that brings us to our factory. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like today, or maybe take something like an animated film and turn it into a live baby live, or something entirely different, so to speak. So today with M, this was a hard one because we didn't necessarily know if we wanted to recast it with a, you know, Americanized cast as well as a modern day cast. It's a difficult movie to cast in that there are a lot of characters. Even as we were talking about this, if you noticed, we didn't really necessarily mention specific characters. We more or less said there's the criminals and there's the cops and there's this mother and there's this girl and there's the killer. And so it's, you know, it's very not ambiguous, but there isn't really necessarily like the prominent characters, so to speak, to recast it. So it became hard to say, let's recast it. We also couldn't necessarily think of a good game for this one. So we ultimately came up with the idea to what, Gus?
So M has a lot to say. M is, a dark film with a deep meaning, and all these different characters that we only get to experience all these things in an hour and 51 minutes, as we just discussed. So what if we made it modern in this sense, not recasting it, not who's directing it and such, but what if we stretched this movie? What if we made it a limited series? Would that be necessary? What would it entail? What would we expand upon? Where would it even stream? Like, what kind of streaming service would host this kind of story? And so what would M look like if it was a limited series?
I believe that if we were going to do this first and foremost, we need our backers. We need our producers. Who's putting this show on their streaming service? Who's going to do it the best service, put the most weight behind it, put the most money behind it? And I feel that, ultimately, the best...
Disney Plus.
Yeah, the best place for this is... where you can find it now, HBO Max. I feel like they would put the best money into it. I feel like, in terms of business decision, they need more TV shows, original TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think HBO would be the place to be for this one. You look at Netflix, they just have so many different things that it might get lost in the shuffle. Hulu, while I did just finish an original show on there, Only Murders in the Apartment, which is phenomenal.
In the building.
It's in an apartment building. The Arconia. The very good show. I don't necessarily go out of my way to watch shows on Hulu, original programming necessarily. And so I find myself that HBO Max would probably be the best place for it, and that's already the place you can find the original.
Yeah, I agree. All those reasons alone are why a good home for this kind of a series would find its roots on HBO Max. But, another spot, I've just slowly been discovering this app, is Apple TV. Mm. They have a lot of content on there, but also they're not afraid to show some darker stuff. Neither is HBO Max. I'm just giving it another option, I suppose.
But I won't watch it on Apple TV.
We're not sponsored, but you can get a free trial for 6 months.
I don't like Apple stuff. They're mean.
Oh. I don't like apples. They remind me of fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. Fruit. Yeah. PC and Android. Kind of person. So Apple HBO, TV for me.
HBO Max.
No more caramel corn for me.
That's deep.
Yes. I've made a couple deep cuts the past few days, but that one might be the deepest.
Yeah, I lost my arm because of that one.
That's
deep.
That's Master of Disguise for the less informed.
Let's say this M limited series is on HBO Max. How limited is it? How many episodes can you see this being?
Three. For the prime reason that limited series, I believe, is three episodes. For it to be called a limited series.
No.
Four?
No. No, it can be, I think it's less than 10.
What is the definition? Definition
of a show Queen's Gambit series. Is considered a limited series, and it was like 9 episodes long.
Limited series is a program that has an end date and a limit to the number of episodes each stated.
So yeah, first episode. It's a show that's not based on seasons. You know,
it's usually longer than a mini series, but it's done with its story after one season.
I would say around two or three is like a mini series kind of deal.
What constitutes a mini story presented in sequential episodes? Thanks, Merriam-Webster.
It's the same thing as a limited series.
Even LifeWire.com says limited series is just one season consisting of a few episodes. Thanks. So
just to clarify, unless you want to change your mind, if you're saying three episodes, I'm just assuming they're an hour each.
Hour each, yep.
So you're adding just an hour of content to your M.
Mm-hmm. And expanding upon, because the story in and of itself, like you said, has a good message in it, but it's a pretty tight film. And so you don't want to mess with that too much. I think if you expand this, almost make it like I'm thinking more along the lines of Django Unchained, the extended version that you can find on Netflix, Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight that you find on Netflix, the extended version is 4 episodes long. Each episode is an hour long. I think that's the best way to watch The Hateful Eight, Because The Hateful Eight in and of itself is a long film, watching it over the course of four 1 hour episodes, while it's longer, makes the film a little more complete and makes it a little more fun to watch because you're watching it almost as a TV show, and I enjoyed it that way. So I'm thinking more along those lines, where we're taking the film and expanding on it, but still keeping it tight.
I mean, I hear you. I do. And that's why I did like this movie as much as I did, was it is tight. Like, there's nothing out of place, really. Nothing unnecessary, you know? But if I was making this into a limited series, I'd want to stretch it. I'm going to say to six episodes, hour long each. And, you know, within these six episodes, you do get the story of M, the movie. But what I would add, and I would have episodes dedicated to certain characters, get their background, something, events that happened to them that lead to their position in the story of M. So, for example, I can't remember the names, but the guy who's the leader of the underground crime ring kind of thing, the gentleman who has the bowler derby and the cane, maybe a background episode on him. Maybe even two episodes on the killer himself.
Yeah.
Maybe his upbringing or the first time he ever killed, or maybe the one before Elsie, because that's mentioned throughout this movie, but you don't see it. Not that you need to see it, but and that kind of adds to it. But I think they could almost make another M movie within this limited series. You know what I mean?
Yeah. See, like so. I similar to you in that I think I would like the show. Sorry, I don't know what she's barking at because she's laying down. I think the show, my version, some things that I would expand it on. So like the first, I could split it up into three episodes. First episode is dealing with not only the opening of this movie, but in expanding upon that, the aftermath of that, her, the mom going to the police and the police then actively searching, everything like that. But starting that, preceding all of that with the original murder. Then leading directly into, you know, how that mother dealt with it, and then going into that newspaper clipping. I mean, you could even do something along the lines of like the movie, the show starts with them discovering the body and figuring out everything that's going on and writing the newspaper article, and then it fades out and into the newspaper article where this one kind of starts, where the movie starts, but then goes from there. And the first episode would deal with more the events that preceded Elsie's murder, and then the whole original opening, so to speak, and then the aftermath of that. The second part would be more the underground, dealing with the aftermath, dealing with everything, and then ending with them branding, with the homeless branding the murderer, and then the third being the finale of the film, and expanding upon the iconic scene that, you know, I don't even think we've actually mentioned what happens at the end of the film, which I don't want to spoil, but expanding upon that, because like we both said, there's a lot to be said about that finale, and so you add on to that, and it makes it maybe not more important and interesting to watch, but just gives it more of a chance to just dive deeper into what's being said, so to speak.
It sounds like
somebody wants to sell me something.
Sounds like I need to flip a coin.
It probably.
So heads is going to be Ben's 3-episode limited series. Tails be my 6.
And then you're HBO will be in contact.
And it is heads.
Ayo. So my suggestion, my movie, and that. So yeah, 3-episode limited series, just expanding on this movie that's already tight as tight can be. Now, hell, if it succeeds, you can make a prequel series with all your backgrounds and that, like real Fargo style, the show Fargo, where it kind of does that. In terms of this, it's where we're at. Speaking on Fargo, I could see this show being on like FX, like not a streaming service, but like on TV on FX, or like A&E, or is that where The Walking Dead is? A&E?
AMC.
AMC. Why did I say A&E?
Jeez. I don't know.
They all have A's in them. But yeah, indeed. So anything else, E, before we get going?
That's all the Odyssey LC we got for Ian's today on the Brothers Movie Factory.
Big time. So that is the show. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post the show to first, and then subsequently it gets posted everywhere else. So Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, wherever you find your podcast. Hey, we're there. You can also find us over on Facebook. We are at, Twitter. We're at the Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and different things that Gus makes, such as memes and that. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Yes, you weren't lying when you said you can find us on Facebook, because if you typed in the Brothers Movie Factory on that platform, you'll find us. Click on it, like us, share what we post. I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week, and links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and at.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it, but until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers.